Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today you're listening to HR Educational Radio. And today our guest is Chris Clough. He is the president of Paper Trails. He is joining us to talk about HR compliance challenges for small businesses. Chris, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me, Dave.
No, great to have you on board. Boy, there's nothing going on here in 2023. It's a boring year. There's never any compliance changes, right? It's all easy spoof sailing.
You know, it's keeping us in business for sure, keeping us busy.
We're counting on that, actually. Yes. I think it is, right? Yeah, we're counting on that. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? Tell us a little bit about Paper Trails. Give us kind of an overview of, you know, why you bring this information to the table today.
Sure. So we're a payroll and HR company in Maine here. We've got several hundred Maine-based and New England-based clients that we work with. Really, you know, payroll's, you know, the good old boring part of our job, but the new part of our job really is helping our clients stay in compliance with all the new rules, regulations, laws that are coming down the pipeline. As we're seeing across the country, you know, we're seeing very active legislatures in most states, and that's causing some real headaches for small businesses, just as they're trying to learn all the new programs that are coming down the road that they have to comply with. You know, it's not just the basic, you know, overtime and minimum wage rules anymore. There's so many HR and compliance related things that are happening that small businesses have to be aware of and have to stay in compliance with. So we're really happy to be able to help our clients stay on in front of these challenges and keep things moving forward for them. So,
well, we appreciate you having you on today to talk about that. And of course, we're going to be talking about compliance across the country. But what's interesting, I think, is that there are some consistencies across the company, trends that are happening. It's really evolving here in 2023. And, you know, it's interesting. I saw an article back in December that talked about the fact that the administration has been very, very active nationally in the labor changes, and the amount of compliance that has changed is at a record-setting pace. Are you seeing that as well?
Absolutely. We're seeing across the country, you know, from a national level and on the state levels, a lot of the legislatures are kind of working together in some of these instances to help craft the laws and rules very similarly across businesses and industries. I was reading an article myself just last week. California itself has 50 or 60 some odd new changes coming in 2023 that businesses in that state are going to have to deal with. In Maine, where we are, there's three or four big Department of Labor kind of changes and rules and regulations that are coming down the road for, you know, our Maine-based clients. But it's definitely something that has kept the legislatures busy over the last few years as they're trying to do that. And like I said, a lot of these legislative bodies are really working together and copying the bills from each state and kind of crafting it to meet the needs of their own states. But definitely we're seeing a lot of activism in those legislatures to keep things moving forward.
And why do you think there is such an active change? I mean, a lot of these things that we're talking about, and, you know, highlight a few: earned paid leave, vacation pays out, you know, paid family medical, different requirements as we go across them. Why do you think there's so much, discussion about these today when they've been issues over the years that have come and go?
Sure. I mean, certainly workplace, you know, the workplace has changed, right? I think we've all talked about that. You talk about that. You see it every day. I see it every day. And I think you're seeing that employees are demanding a lot more of their employers. You know, it used to be, as employers, we had the pick of what we wanted and we get to offer, you know, whatever we wanted for benefits. But now I think you're seeing the employees, the reverse is happening. Those employees are now demanding what they want from their employers. And I think you're seeing a lot of these types of things come out. That the employers are demanding a better work-life balance. They're demanding more fairness in a lot of areas in that thing. They're looking for more benefits to help, you know, with their lives, right? We're all looking to live better lives. And I think you're seeing the legislative bodies kind of take control of that and really push for some of these things. Like we said, paid family medical leave. You know, we saw during COVID, you know, from the CARES Act, we had COVID sick pay. which was a tremendous asset to both employees and employers. And I think that was the first national paid leave program that they kind of tested, and it worked really well. It was, again, a great benefit for employees and employers. And now we're seeing a lot of states push out a paid family medical leave program for their employees and employers. So you're seeing these trends where the employees are demanding more of their employers. And I think the legislative bodies are really kind of helping to push the workforce into some of these better benefits and so forth and protections.
Small business represents like 80-85% nationally of all businesses. And historically, they're the backbone, if we'll say, of America today. Whether it's family businesses or individual proprietary businesses, I do find that they are sometimes reeling at the fact of more and more regulations being sent down, more and more cost to the organization. And most of them, as we all know, don't have what we would call exploding budgets of extra cash just sitting around in the back room in a shoebox. How do you see or hear from your clients about this evolving change of compliance with small businesses?
Sure. With anything, as you said, compliance comes with a cost generally, right? And I think that's absolutely a challenge. And when you talk about some of these different programs that are coming out, some of them are limited to certain size businesses, right? 10 or more employees or 15 or more employees. And that certainly helps some of the smallest employers manage that. But then again, a small business with 10 employees is not, generally speaking, doing multi-million dollars worth of business. So it is a strain on their budgets, and trying to say, if you tell an employer that they have to pay out 40 hours of paid time, for example, 40 hours could be $1,000 extra per employee. That's $10,000 a year, for example. They've got to fit into their budget. And, if you're looking at those types of laws, and as businesses are trying to comply with those laws, everyone's having to make tough decisions in their business. And certainly, the big thing that we're seeing, and I think, this is probably just one very small piece of our inflationary period that we're in right now, is prices have to be adjusted to cover all these types of things. So, as we're seeing inflation, rapidly 8 or 9% go up across the country, certainly I would argue that just a small piece of that probably has to do with some of these compliance challenges, because all of us as businesses have to, we have to charge more to be able to meet these compliances. Not only do the laws themselves cost direct money to the employer, then those employers have to hire folks like you and me to help them manage it. So, it's all that trickle down from there. So definitely, that added cost really does have to come from somewhere. And I think most of these small businesses, as we talk about that backbone. Most of these folks aren't getting rich off these businesses. They're making a comfortable living, and they're employing local people and all those great things. So we all have to make those hard decisions in our businesses to be able to comply and manage these new policies.
Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk here, WLOB 100.5 FM. And of course, podcasted nationally across all major podcast channels at the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. And we're having fun here today as I chuckle along. And of course, we're having some fun talking about compliance with small businesses. Let's take one. You mentioned it, paid family medical leave. I know that there are about 11 states currently will or will not offer it. Give us like an overview. Tell us a little bit about it in depth, and what really should owners, operators, operations people, HR professionals know about this?
Sure. Paid family medical leave is definitely a trend that's coming across the country. We're seeing it, it's in 11 states right now: California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland. We've got Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Oregon, Rhode Island, Washington State. I think we're going to see Maine added to that list next year. I know the legislature is working on that. These programs are a little bit different. Generally speaking, they're a state-run program, similar to an unemployment fund. The employees and the employers generally both pay a portion into this fund through payroll. Every state has their program set a little bit differently. And of course, just like unemployment, there's experience ratios and things like that that come into effect that are going to really change the rates for every employer. But generally, you're seeing about 0.5% of an employee's wages on both the employee and the employer side are getting paid into this fund. And what that, when an employee needs to go out for any medical reason, you know, some sort of long-term leave of absence, whether it's a surgery, a medical condition, pregnancy, for example, they're allowed to go collect from the state, similar to unemployment, for that. What that payout looks like is different, again, in every state. There's different formulas for every state, but generally speaking, you're probably looking at a 60 to 80% of an employee's weekly gross wage, up to, you know, a certain amount. Every state, again, has a different maximum. So it's not like if you're, you know, if you're making $100,000 a year, you probably aren't going to get your 60 or 80%. You may get a little bit less, but it really is benefiting the, you know, the true working class employees. You know, with these types of programs, they're very similar to a short and long-term disability that your private employer may offer. So this is, you know, kind of the government stepping in and saying, okay, if your employer isn't offering a short or a long-term disability program in this situation, now the state's kind of stepping in to offer that. So it's a pretty unique thing. And like I said, I guess you could say the national pilot was during COVID, when we all had COVID sick pay opportunities there. And it worked, you know, it was a great benefit for the employees and the employer. This is a little bit different in that the employee and the employer are both contributing to this fund, generally speaking. And in some states, I know in Massachusetts, for example, family leave, if there's a pregnancy, both the husband and the wife, the mother and the father can take that. Whereas, you know, typically in a short-term disability, it would only be the mother that would be able to take, you know, that paid time off. So they're really looking at those social issues and trying to have family leave, trying to have long-term leaves of absences for medical conditions and severe illnesses, things like that. It's just another safety net that states are putting in place for these, for folks.
So the employer and the employee has to pay in to a fund, whatever that fund may be. It's collected through payroll.
Absolutely.
Correct. And it's done directly, just like unemployment.
Yep. Just, it's going to be very similar to unemployment. And you're going to see, we do this for some of our clients in the states where there's paid family leave. We take that, we collect that as part of payroll, right out of the employee's check, right for the employer. We remit those contributions off to the state. There, of course, is a quarterly tax return, just like unemployment, that reconciles all of that. And the states then go ahead and get everything squared away on their end. So when someone goes for a claim, they have all your wage information and so forth already in their database. So it's definitely a little bit easier process for the employer to manage. You know, the nice thing about that is it does take the management administrative piece of that leave largely away from the employer, right? So it's very much easier than for me as an employer that have to file a short or long-term disability claim with my insurance carrier. Now that all of that paperwork and administrative work is pushed to the employee to then call the state and get that squared away. So so it's, there is a little bit of a benefit to, you know, to that as well for the employer. So,
you know, that's a great part of the question, which I'm sure HR professionals are wondering, does this replace short-term and long-term disability, or is it a, how does that typically work?
Sure. So I would say that it certainly could replace short and long-term disability, depending on what your business culture is and what you want to provide as an employer. I think it definitely allows for an employer to take a second look at that expense, right? I actually had a conversation with a client who has retail locations in Maine and Massachusetts, and he was looking to offer short and long-term disability to his employees. And I said, well, hey, whoa, just a second. You have paid family leave in Massachusetts. So one of the things you want to talk to your insurance agent about is, do we exclude those Massachusetts employees from that? Is there a provision for less premium to be paid? Because presumably, if you're using a paid family medical program through the state, the need for a short-term disability probably is almost non-existent. Long-term disability may still be needed just because that generally goes up to 2 years potentially in coverage, whereas a paid family leave program usually is 24 weeks about the max, depending again on the state. But that seems to be about the maximum of 24, 26 weeks. So, you know, it kind of replaces your short-term disability, I think, potentially. But if you really want to offer a long-term disability for someone that may be out with a cancer diagnosis that's having long treatments or something like that, you know, definitely you may want to still have that long-term disability.
Yeah, I suspect a carrier would not pay short-term on top of a paid family medical leave policy. I can't imagine that you'd be able to double dip into these type of things. I suspect that's probably true. Obviously, when we're talking about paid family medical leave, does the employer need to do anything other than sign them up typically?
So generally speaking, the employer have to sign themselves up with the state, you know, just again, like the unemployment, very similar program. Once they're registered, they're going to get an ID number. They're going to get their rates for both the employees and the employers. They're going to want to go ahead and let their payroll provider know, if they're working with a third party payroll provider, what those ID numbers are, what the rates are. Some states may have a power of attorney form that needs to be filled out, something like that. If you are using a third party payroll provider, you're using it in-house, you want to configure your in-house payroll to, you know, to accept these things. Hopefully, whatever system you're using to do your payroll in-house is configured for these. As all these states are changing their programs, all the software providers are having to update their systems. And, you know, generally speaking, what we've seen is most of these states have pretty good documentation on their state websites about how you have to report, when you have to report, and how to sign up and so forth, and for both the employees and the employers. So the states have done a pretty good job educating employees and employers about what needs to be done to comply with these. So, but again, it's almost identical to an unemployment program in how they're structured and set up. So if you're doing what you need to do from an unemployment perspective, should be pretty easy to mimic what you're doing with the paid family leave.
Chris, that was great information. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back. With the legislative landscape consistently evolving, business owners and HR managers face increased challenges running their business. Whether it be earned paid leave in your state, those retirement savings programs that are popping up around the country, or dealing with paid family medical leave, Paper Trails is here to help your business be compliant. Paper Trails consists of a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. At Paper Trails, there's no 1-800 number, and they strive to treat their clients like neighbors because they are. When a question or need arises, Paper Trails is right around the corner. Whether you're looking for accurate payroll and bookkeeping, assistance with local and federal compliance challenges, or additional services like benefit administration and employee onboarding, Paper Trails has the tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while they handle the paperwork. Visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour to learn more. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Today, our guest is Chris Clough. He is the president of Paper Trails, and we're talking about evolving HR compliance challenges for small businesses. Chris, we talked about paid family medical leave in the first segment. Let's move on to what we call earned paid leave. We have a lot of leave going on here. Is anybody Absolutely. Working, Chris? Is anybody really working?
Gosh, well, just wait till everyone starts going to unlimited paid time off, right? We have some clients that are doing that, and we just did that in our company. So, but if you talk about earned paid leave, there's a lot of movement across the states to allow for some sort of mandatory paid time off. You know, every state's doing it a little differently. Some states are saying you have to offer a certain number of sick days. Some states are offering or requiring that you do any type of paid leave. So every state's a little bit different, but generally speaking, it's an accrual model where you are allowed to earn X number of hours off per number of hours worked, right? So if you work, you know, 1 hour off for every 40 hours that you work, up to 40 hours per year, for example. So, you know, you're taking a fractional earning every single time. You get to accrue that in your bank and use it. Again, could be for sick time, could be for any reason. Some states are specifying vacation, sick. When some states, like in Maine, for example, that time has to be able to be used for any reason. So if I want to, you know, if I'm accruing my time and I want to take a vacation day on a Friday, or I want to leave at noon on a Friday and get paid for it, in the state of Maine, you have to allow that under that law. So we're really seeing this evolve across the states. And certainly, you know, we talked about the cost of these types of programs. And if you look at some of the, you know, lower margin businesses, our retail businesses and restaurant, you know, quick service restaurant kind of things, for example, you know, that's been a real challenge, not only from a financial perspective, but also a scheduling and workforce management perspective, right? Most states require that the employer allow them to take the time off, but it does have to be within reason. There has to be a request and so forth. It's not like I can show up at 8 o'clock on a Friday morning and say, hey guys, I'm going to leave at noon today. There does have to be some sort of process in place. And that's why it's really important for employers to be crafting a good handbook and good policies around these, right? So every employer has to take a look at their state's laws. And again, every state has a different law. So if you have, you know, employees in different states, you know, you really have to think about what your paid time off policies are going to look like and how you're going to manage them across multiple states. And once you have that good policy written and you're in compliance, you know, it should be easier to administer that, you know, scheduling and workforce management. But you're definitely seeing in quote unquote production type businesses where, you know, where you have a body that has to produce something in order to make money or serve your customers or whatever. We're seeing some scheduling issues for sure with folks around this as people are trying to manage their time off. You know, everyone wants the good days off, you know, everyone wants the holidays and things off. So sometimes that's created challenges for employers.
You know, on the earned paid leave front, some employers, obviously, some states, I should say, have different minimums or maximums in terms of what they are allowing. One of the questions came up is, you know, is it like PTO in some states where they actually, if they leave, they get paid out? Yeah. In other states, it isn't. How do organizations keep track of all this?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. Every state's got these set up a little bit differently. And, you know, there's the payout requirements in many states as well, right? So if you look at California, California basically says any employee can earn paid leave for any reason. Whenever they work 30 hours or more, they get 1 hour of time off for every 30 hours that they're working. And in Colorado, you have to pay that time off out when an employee leaves. So every state is a little bit different. Again, in Maine, we have a new law that says you have to pay out vacation time, but you don't have to pay out PTO or earned paid leave or sick time. So anything labeled as vacation would have to be paid out upon termination, but not any other type of leave. So there's some, you know, inconsistencies in the laws that have been passed in these states. In some states, you have to pay it out in their next regularly scheduled check. In other states, you may have to pay it out immediately. So, for example, if you terminate an employee in Massachusetts, you must pay out all of their accrued time that very same day and generally earned wages as well. So so you got to keep an eye on those types of things if you're terminating an employee or if they're terminating themselves. So,
yeah, this is probably the biggest challenge for employers is how do you, if you're in multiple states, multiple jurisdictions, and you have different rules, different laws, different nuances for each. You almost need a full-time person doing this type of work. And that, of course, is what HR is there for. But a lot of times, for these smaller businesses that may have one or two people in five or six states, it can be a heck of a nightmare.
Oh, for sure. And especially we're seeing that with remote employees. You know, I mean, ever since, especially in the last couple of years since COVID, we're seeing, you know, everybody's moving across the country, right? People are saying, hey, gosh, I don't want to live in the Northeast anymore. I'm going south for the winter. And we have, you know, you're seeing the snowbird trend happen even to working folks that are living, you know, in the Northeast in the summer and going south for the winter. Because they're able to work remotely, they're doing that. You know, that creates certainly compliance challenges, both for the employer, but also tax challenges for the employee. So you have to always look at that when you're looking at all these types of things. If an employee is working in another state that's not where their business is headquartered, generally speaking, that employer is going to have to register for withholding taxes, unemployment, if there's a paid family leave. And don't forget, it's all based on where that employee is working. So all of these compliance things that are happening in all these states, you still have to comply with. So it definitely creates a headache if you've got folks that are in different locations. You know, we're seeing everyone thinks it's great. Hey, we can work from anywhere. It's, you know, it's a wonderful thing, right? I mean, I personally was just in Florida for 2 weeks working, you know, remotely. It's a great thing, but it creates those challenges for employers as they are trying to manage their businesses, right? And particularly for small businesses. I mean, I know we have a client has five employees, and like you said, they're in five different states. So it's really challenging for them to make sure that they're complying with all the states, you know, overtime rules, unemployment, paid family leave, vacation, whatever is going on in that state. And certainly there are states that are more active in these regulatory environments than others. But it's a headache for sure for small businesses. If you're a five employee company with employees in five states, you better watch out. So.
Yeah, this is, again, part of the biggest challenge is I'm seeing in terms of from an HR perspective. There's no question about that. Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And of course, we're talking with Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. Educational HR Radio. Remember, the HR Power Hour is podcast across all national podcast channels. And of course, on WLOB Radio here in the great state of Maine at 100.5 FM. Or, of course, you can go to hrpowerhour.com and listen anywhere across the country. Chris, we're everywhere, everywhere you want to be. We're just there. It's all there. Okay. So as we continue down this track of memory lane in terms of the exciting new HR compliance challenges, you did mention vacation payout requirements. That is something that is, again, increasingly becoming another compliance area.
Absolutely. You know, we're seeing that more and more states are requiring that. Where if an employee leaves either of their own choosing or of your choosing, for sure, you may have to pay out any accrued vacation time, leave, whatever they may have on the books. You know, we're seeing a lot of clients go from that traditional quote unquote bucket model, you know, giving someone 80 hours of time off at the beginning of the year to a more accrual model, right? Where you would earn 1 hour for or every 40 hours worked, for example. Because what happens if you give someone 80 hours in January, and if you're in a state where vacation has to be paid out upon termination and January 15th, they walk out the door, you're on the hook to pay them that 80 hours. And that's cash out of pocket, right? So we're seeing more and more of our clients and employers really taking a look at that accrual model of earning, you know, earning your time rather than just gifting that time to try to minimize that liability. Because that's a real financial liability for small businesses, for sure. You know, when we look at how you track that information, it's really important to try to make sure you have that integrated with your payroll somehow, right? As you are keeping track of, as you're reporting hours worked, you know, most payroll systems are able to keep track of that accrual in the background so that we know that, you know, what they have earned, what they have used, that balance is deducted. And you can pull reports at any time to see who has what time available. So it's definitely important to keep good track of good and good records of time off so that when someone does leave and you have to pay it out, you're able to.
No, you're exactly right. And this is the what I call the death of gifting at the front of the year, because, you have to pay them out. If you start January 1 and they leave January 2, you have to pay the full 80 For hours sure. in your example. Yeah. I think that's going to be something that's going to change. And not that it's right or wrong, but I do think that that's a no common sense there in terms of not doing it that way.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to state requirements when it comes to minimum wage. I think as we head into this year, there's already been some changes here a few weeks ago, beginning with the beginning of the year. Let's talk about minimum wage and effects that you're seeing across the country.
So we're seeing... as effective as of January 1st, there are over 30 states that have updated their minimum wage this year. We're seeing a lot of these states have pegged their minimum wage increases to a CPI index or something similar to that. Again, every state's a little bit different, but we're seeing, you know, generally speaking, in those states where they're pegged to CPI, you're seeing, you know, 6 to 8% increases or more in the minimum wage in some of those states. So you're definitely seeing a big impact from a minimum wage perspective. We know that there's a pretty small percentage of the population that works just minimum wage, right? There are certain industries that are known for that more than others. But what we're finding, particularly with our clients, is that, you know, the minimum wage increases, driving wage increases for everybody, right? You know, if your minimum wage goes from $12.50 to $13.80, for example, you know, like we've gone to $13.80 in Maine this year. You're seeing that the folks that are making that $18, $20 an hour, they don't want to make that anymore. They want to see a commensurate adjustment in their wages. So, you know, most employers, we're seeing employers sometimes in the last couple of years, they've been doing raises twice a year or more just to try to keep up with the market. As we see folks who are, you know, jumping and moving all around looking for a better deal, you know, wages are increasing. And we've seen a lot of clients that have had to hire new employees for a higher wage than they may be paying their existing employees, which then creates other issues. And in some states, that's illegal. So those are things to keep track of as well. And in job postings, for example, in some states, you have to disclose what you're paying new folks or what you're willing to offer new folks, which potentially could create issues in-house, right? So we're trying to see some of that fairness stuff and try to thread the needle with the increased costs and the rise in labor. So...
especially on the compensation side, right? The compression between Each level of payout is becoming more and more a problem. It's getting narrower rather than wider,
For
or
sure.
they're really widening it to a point that it's almost, you know, it doesn't seem reasonable, but they're doing that because the bands need to be a way that make it so that people have ranges to go into. And that if you widen enough and they're overlapping, then people don't get as concerned or upset about it. So I do understand the compensation side of that. I know enough of it to understand that. But it is something, one of those things that we challenge employers to think about more and more now. And with that, we need to make sure that job descriptions are accurate. All the other components that go into the minimum wage are all part of that, especially as we try to make sure that we're being compliant with pay transparency laws. Look at New York City has a new pay transparency law that really requires everything to be disclosed, everything all the time. And it's
Absolutely.
really creating an interesting dynamic and paradigm shift in the pay market.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the exempt side of the equation for just a few minutes, the salary side, as most people call it. What's your thoughts on that? What are you seeing?
Sure. So, you know, we talk a lot about exempt versus non-exempt salary versus hourly employees, right? In every state, nationally as well, there are certain duties tests as well as wage tests that have to be met in order for an employee to be exempt from overtime, right? That you're a salaried employee, you do not have to pay overtime as part of their gross salary. You know, when we talk about a duties test nationally and in most states, the duties test requires some sort of managerial role in particular or certain professional roles. Every state, again, is a little bit different. At the feds, they have pretty specific rules as well. So it's not just, you can't just say, hey, Joe, the line cook, you're a nice guy. I'm going to give you $800 a week because I feel like that's what we should do. If he's not managing people or isn't in some sort of executive role, you're not able to make someone an exempt employee. Similarly, you know, we're seeing that exempt employee threshold increase dramatically across the country. Most states have already come up with a higher formula to make sure that your wage has to be much higher in order to be exempt. So it's not just the duties anymore. Now your wage has to be significantly higher. And you're usually looking at, you know, two and a half times a minimum wage is kind of that lowest salary threshold is what we're seeing in most states. And there's certainly legislation afoot at the U.S. Department of Labor to potentially adjust that as well significantly. So you're seeing that the cost of making someone a salaried employee is going up more and more every year as well.
No, it absolutely is. Chris, again, great segment of information. We're going to be right back for the next one on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. Today, we're talking with Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. And of course, you're listening to Educational HR Radio. I'm your host, David Chulo. We're talking about evolving HR compliance challenges for small businesses. If you're a small business, you know exactly what we're talking about. Chris, we've talked about earned paid leave, vacation payout requirements, paid family medical leave. We've talked about minimum wage, salary requirements. Yes, there's more. How about state retirement mandates? This seems to be all the rage suddenly.
Gosh, well, don't you want to retire soon, Dave? Come on.
Can I start now? My wife said that if I retire, she'll go back to work. So what I'm wondering is when I told her I'm retiring today, I still end up work today. I don't understand how that works. I don't get it.
Well, gosh, well, you know, since we all want to retire hopefully comfortably someday, states are really kind of stepping in to fill a gap. Certainly, we have Social Security at a national level, which has always been that great safety net. But what we're finding is there's a very large proportion of particularly small businesses that don't offer their employees some sort of retirement program, right? And certainly, you know, as we know, the sooner you start saving, the better off you're going to be in the long run when it comes to retirement savings. So we're seeing only about 4 in 10 small businesses with under 100 employees are actually offering a retirement vehicle, a 401k or a simple IRA, something like that. And I think the legislatures have taken notice of that and are really trying to help, you know, not only the employers, but also the employees with a method for further retirement savings. Because certainly, you know, I get my little Social Security statement every year, I think. I'm a long way to retirement, but I still see that in the mail once a year. And gosh, you know, I don't know how folks can live on that, you know, little bit of Social Security that you're going to get. So what is happening, most states are creating a retirement savings program based on a Roth IRA. So what's happening is the state will create a fund at the state level. And if your business has a certain number of employees, usually it's employee-based, 5 or more or 10 or more employees, then you are required to either have a qualified retirement plan, think a 401k, simple IRA, and so forth. Most of the state laws specifically say which plans are compliant and qualified, or you must participate and offer your employees access to this state retirement plan. So if you have a 401k already, if you have a simple IRA already, if you have a 457 or a 403b or any one of those plans already, you're generally in compliance. You don't need to do anything else, which is really nice. And we've kind of encouraged our clients to control their own destiny, choose their own product that is best for their business, rather than, you know, being lumped in with everybody else at the state level. So so that's, you know, certainly an option. There are great plans that are very little cost, thinking like a simple IRA. That has no administrative costs generally, just a 3% match if you need to. If you wanted to look at a 401k, which is a more common vehicle, has more bells and whistles and tools, you are looking at some admin costs. But at the federal level, there are tax credits that you can take when starting up a retirement plan. So generally speaking, you can get up to $5,000 a year for the first couple of years of your retirement plan in tax credits to offset those admin costs. So there, you know, at the federal level, you're seeing, you know, the Secure Act has really allowed businesses to take tax credits for these startup costs of their plans, which is really nice to encourage that retirement saving as well. So if you're a business that is required to participate in these plans, 5 or 10 or more employees or whatever your state's requiring, and you don't want to offer your own retirement plan for whatever reason, these states are setting up Roth IRA accounts for individuals. Basically, a Roth IRA means that you make a contribution today, you pay all your normal income taxes and so forth, put that money into the state fund. And when you take that money out, because you paid your taxes today, you don't have to pay taxes on the back end when you remove the money. So it's a nice provision as a Roth IRA for that. There are income restrictions and limits on a Roth IRA. All those restrictions still exist, right? So if you are an employee that is a highly compensated employee, you may not be able to participate in this at all, which creates other issues for employers as well. So, you know, definitely, again, every state's a little bit different, but for the most part, these Roth IRAs are the method everyone's is setting up at a state level.
Well, it's one of the simpler ways to do it, right, from that perspective.
And absolutely.
And as we know, they get the tax revenue right up front. So that's not a, not a surprise they set it up that way. I'm just saying, I'm not just implying. It's facts, right? It's facts. All right. Well, that makes sense. And that's going to be rolling out. I know it's in 14 states, so they're passing legislation. So I know that that's going to be rolling out very soon. All right. Let's talk about remote workers. Now, we've been talking about it a little bit as we go through this the program here. But, you know, it's certainly gaining traction, though I will say the trend is a little bit more returning at some of the bigger companies. So I don't know. We'll have to see where it ends out. But what's your thought on that?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, we're seeing, you know, everyone went pretty remote for these white collar jobs for quite a while. And we're seeing a lot of big companies say, hey, it's time to come back to the office. I think every company is a little different based on their culture, right? You know, we certainly talk about culture in any business and with your HR and your policies and so forth. And I think that this is no different, right? You know, generally speaking, a lot of the tech companies are staying remote, but you're seeing a lot of those legacy businesses, the banks and types of businesses like that, that are really saying, no, we want you back in the office. We want to be with you face to face. You know, that's their culture, right? It's been their culture for hundreds of years. Even small businesses. I mean, I have a couple of employees that went home for COVID and actually are far more productive at home than they ever were in the office. So we've learned as an organization how to manage that. You know, we do, instead of our, you know, lunches in the office, we make sure we have our weekly Zoom meetings. So we're still touching each other. And certainly we have all the technology to be able to have our phones at home and so forth, where we're staying in touch. But it really comes down to culture. And I got to tell you, I think there's really an employee piece of that too, right? The employees have to be able to self-manage themselves, and that's not right for everybody, right? So that creates management issues for all of us. And how do we manage those employees remotely? How do we figure that out? I think you saw a lot of companies kind of use that technology to make sure their employees are active and actually working and so forth. I think there may be a little bit of a pullback on that just from a privacy concern standpoint and things like that. But we've tried a lot to figure out how to manage those people. I know we have a client who hired a couple of employees who were working remotely. They hired them and they said, no, we want to be in the office. We're not good remote employees. Right. We want to be in the office. We want that culture. We want that, we want to be able to talk to our coworkers and our clients and so forth. And they wanted to come back to the office. The employees did. So I think it's a personal decision for each company, for each employee. Certainly it's definitely a big trend. And as the all, you know, with that, not only culture comes the compliance challenges with it. So,
yeah, and that's the real challenge because, of course, now you're deciding on what you're going to be doing from a compliance standpoint based on the state where they live and now work. Everything from ergonomics to taxes to labor laws to vacation, paid leave, like all these
workers
things apply.
Comp, everything.
Workers yeah. comp, it's everything. So yeah. So now you have to be schooled on multiple states. Are you seeing a lot of your clients, you know, really struggling at that, or at least, you know, coming and saying, these are my challenges?
Absolutely. I mean, quite frankly, most of our clients aren't aware of those challenges, right? They think, hey, well, I've got an employee. He just moved to Texas. It's great. He's doing great for me. Everything's fine, right? Well, no, he just moved to Texas. So guess what? You have to now comply with all of the Texas taxes, laws, regulations, compliance challenges that are there. And again, people don't know about all of that stuff. You know, the real big challenge is, you know, the states do a pretty good job of publishing a lot of information, but there's not a central repository that I've found that says, hey, if you have an employee that moved to Texas, you got to think about that, 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 and that, you know, these are the things, you know, so it's a challenge to scour the labor law, you know, website for every state and figure out what labor law posters you have to give them if they have these paid family leaves, vacation payouts, all these kind of things. To really make sure you're in compliance. And, you know, maybe that's a great employee, but I think you have to ask yourself if it's worth it. You know, certainly in some states, you know, California, New York, Illinois, those are the three big ones that, again, I think there's 30 some odd changes and compliance regulations coming that have just come out January 1st in California alone, right? I mean, how do you keep up with all that? They are a super active state in terms of these compliance things. And it's a headache, to put it nicely, to manage them.
Which is why, unfortunately, California is seeing one of the largest exoduses of all states for workers
for sure.
in the nation. But, you know, it still means you have to do what you have to do to make this happen. And I think that's the important part. Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. And, of course, we're talking with Chris Clough. He's the president of Paper Trails Educational HR Radio today about compliance challenges for small businesses. Let's talk about anti-discrimination laws. There are such a thing, Chris? Really?
Sure. You know, those have expanded a lot, right? I mean, you know, we've had ADA, we've had all those legacy anti-discrimination laws, you know, sexual harassment, all those kind of things. But we're really seeing a lot of new laws that are trying to level the playing field and reduce racial and gender pay gaps and similar situations. So, you know, a lot of things we're seeing, those pay transparency laws. That's the big one that's coming down the road, right? If you post a job, you have to post the exact range that you're willing to pay for it in the job listing. You can't just say, depending on experience or very competitive anymore, you have to say, hey, we're going to pay you, Mr. Line Cook, between $18 and $20 an hour. And that is visible not only to the candidates, but also to your existing employees as you're working through that. And it's intended to, you know, allow the eyes wide open situation so that we're hopefully seeing some of the pay disparities between men and women, for example, or certain ethnicities disappear, right? That's the idea in those laws.
When you find that employers are dealing with this specific area, how much effort does it take them to change the operation and compliance part of their handbook? Maybe it's their operational area, their payroll company, all the things that go into, and then the educational piece, the development and training past that.
For sure. I mean, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You want to make sure that not only all your policies are in line with these anti-discrimination laws, you got to make sure your handbooks are up to date and accurate and stating your intentions to be a fair and non-discriminatory employer. But you also have to make sure that your job descriptions are up to date, right? First of all, we see a lot of small business owners that just don't even have a job description to begin with for most of these positions. So getting one is the first step. But the second step is really outlining your compensation and pay strategy. And, you know, we talk about small businesses, you know, we talked about those bands of pay and things like that. Sure, corporate America does that all day long. And that's, they have, you know, there are positions called compensation analysts, right? That work for Walmart, probably, that this is what they do for a living. You know, hey, Mr. Joe Schmo, restaurant owner, doesn't have a compensation analyst on his staff to deal with that. So it's one more hat that these small business owners and managers really have to manage. So, you know, when you look at it, it's updating your policies and your procedures, but then it's also making sure, like you said, that you're actually implementing what you say you're going to implement. And that's making sure that payroll is up to date, making sure that you are doing, when you are giving performance-based bonuses or other compensation or even raises, you want to make sure you're fair in those as well, right? It's not just the starting pay rate, because generally speaking, you're giving an increase maybe annually or biannually or whenever you're going to do it. And you want to make sure that you're not discriminating at those times as well. So documentation really is what it comes down to in HR, to make sure that you are covering your butt in terms of these kind of laws.
Always does. And of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to HR Educational Radio. Today, we've been talking with the one and only Chris Klopp from Paper Trails, president, and we are talking about evolving HR compliance challenges for small businesses. Chris, assuming everybody hasn't had a heart attack as a business owner based on all the compliance issues that you brought up today, or in fact, that they have not necessarily done all the things that you mentioned, what are some of the things that, look, today, you've heard it all here on the show. You know there's a lot of stuff to look into. What are the first steps an employer of a small business should do to at least recognize, are they at least okay now, or do we need to get things done?
Yeah, gosh, you know, one of the things, we talk about a trusted team of advisors for small businesses, right? We, you know, it always has been their accountant, their attorney, their financial advisor. And I have to tell you, more than ever, I really think that some sort of HR capacity needs to be in that trusted team of advisors. It's not a sexy thing that we have to do in our business for sure, but it's a new thing that you got to be on top of, because the penalties for not complying with some of these things are pretty steep, not to mention the embarrassment and so forth that goes along with that. Nobody wants to be in the paper for, you know, even unknowingly violating a law. So I would say definitely add, you know, some sort of trusted advisor, whether that's your payroll company, you have an HR consultant, your attorney specializes in employment law, something like that, and do an annual check-in with them. Say, hey, listen, what do we need to do with this? Can we look at my handbook every year? Can we look at this policy? Can we make sure we're in compliance with these kind of things? Having that trusted advisor on your team from an HR perspective really is something I think is mandatory now for small businesses. It's no longer an optional thing. You need a good accountant. You need a good HR person.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, this is probably one of the biggest challenged areas for small businesses, knowing that they're compliant, knowing they're secure. I make widgets every day, Dave. I don't worry about all this stuff. You know, I just want to put a thing in a machine, hit a button, have it come out, sell it to somebody, and have a good day. And I understand and I hear that, right? And I've not met, not, you know, 100, maybe 99.9% of all business owners want to do the right thing. They absolutely do. They want their employees to be taken care of. They want their employees to have a good life. They want themselves to have a good life. It's all interconnected. And this is the stuff that keeps them up at night. So, you know, I appreciate you taking the time today to come on the show and explain some of these challenges, the simple things they really are that have to be done. If somebody wants to reach you directly, how do they do so?
Sure. So you can reach out to us right on our website, papertrails.com. We have some great resources on all of these things that we've talked about. If you go to our resources or blog, we spend a lot of time educating our clients on these items. So we do a lot of articles and so forth. We also do a monthly webinar that can be signed up for on our website on all these different types of compliance challenges. So it's in February, we are going to be doing just a very similar webinar to this, and we're going to go in depth on some more of these compliance challenges for small businesses, particularly around healthcare administration, COBRA, and that kind of thing in February. So that'll be a good one to sign up for if you're looking for more information on that.
No, and I'm sure you should. And they can all go to hrpowerhour.com. That's right, hrpowerhour.com. And they can see you, and your face will be there, and the bio will be there. And if you want to listen to more information or connect with Chris, that information will be there. Chris, thank you very much for being on the show today. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk, WLOB 100.5 FM.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone. And remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.